And today I have the pleasure of bringing on the managing principal of LDK Ventures, Mr. Denton Kelly is in the house. How you doing, Denton?
Doing great. Thanks for having me today, Mark.
You bet. I want to hear your story of you personally. Obviously, we want to know all about the business, and we want to dive into what it's like working in a family business, because you guys, I know, have a very close family. But let's just get to know you a little bit, Denton. Give us an overview of your journey and your career.
Sure. So I started out of college working originally at a REIT as an investment analyst doing acquisitions development in Dallas for a year. And then I spent a few years in the investment banking industry in San Francisco doing originally real estate investment banking, and then ended up doing semiconductors, which I knew absolutely nothing about. But I tend to think of myself as a quick study and was curious enough and succeeded in that for a couple years. And then ultimately moved to New York to go work at a hedge fund doing research for a Soros spinoff hedge fund, and did that for a couple years and cut my teeth on that. Really enjoyed a lot of aspects of it, but kind of felt it was the right thing to do to come back and work with my dad and in the family business of real estate development. I'd always had an affinity for it, but also felt that there was a need to go out and kind of grow on my own.
Yeah. What really prompted that? Yeah. Now, I'm thinking back, right? You have a successful family. You've got a lot of options. What made you want to go out on your own and get involved in finance that way?
I think it was, you know, a couple factors. One, I think my dad and I just had a mutual understanding that it was beneficial to both of us to have that separation for me to kind of go out and seek my own career path. And if ultimately that path led back to Sacramento and working with him, great. If not, that's great too. But I just think it's important for anyone to go out on their own for a meaningful period of time, not just college, but, you know, another 5, 6, 10 years of working on their own before they ever decide to work in a family business, because I think there's just a natural built-in reflex that all kids have, no matter what age, to maybe push back on their parents a little bit.
Were you a wild child? Okay, talk to us about that pushback period.
I really wasn't.
Straight shoot. You got good grades, like in high school, then you went on to college?
Generally speaking, I didn't cause too much mischief.
Okay. Yeah, so you were an athlete in high school, Jesuit high school. You're a local guy. You went off and did sports in college.
Correct.
Like your earliest influences, would they be around the sports and the athletics, or was it the family dynamics with such a close family?
I would say it was more the family dynamics, just kind of being influenced by, you know, dinner table conversation about what my dad was up to, what was going on at Stanford Ranch. That was kind of the project du jour, what brought us out here, and what he was working on and what we would talk about. And then just kind of the overall work ethic, the importance of work ethic was kind of you know, built in around the home, especially from my dad. From the coaching side, some influence, you know, obviously a lot of positive influences there, but when it kind of came to the professional life, it was probably the work ethic I got in the home and the work ethic I got on the field.
I can imagine your dad being kind of he's a hard charger, but being a stern father. How would you describe him as a dad, as contrasting your mom, Mary Jane?
Stern, sure. Stoic, strong.
Okay.
You know, it never took more than just kind of a raising of the eyebrow to know that I'd crossed a line and quickly kind of put me back in check. So there was definitely, I think it's very important for all kids. And now that I have children, I see the importance of it, of really having, you know, rules to live by, consequences when they're not lived by. You know, kids thrive in structure. There's a certain amount of, you know, creativity you want to foster and encourage in all kids and have free play and things like that. But I think a majority of the time they need structure and they need, you know, consequences when they don't live within that structure. But at the same time, having some amount of free time to really kind of create that curiosity and creativity.
Well, your curiosity led you into the world of finance. Now you're back in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. You guys have an enormous enterprise. Talk to us about what you're bringing in terms of finance to LDK.
Sure. So my, you know, historically my dad had been, you know, kind of more of a very large project investor one at a time. So Stanford Ranch we still have land in Stanford Ranch. We moved out here, you know, when I was 16, you know, 26 years ago. Right.
And those of you that may not know Stanford Ranch, it's a huge development, game-changing development in the town of Rockland.
Correct.
In South Placer.
Correct.
Right.
And so that's what actually brought us out here. It was actually when I was 14, so it was actually 28 years ago. And we still have land out there we're developing. Not much. It's kind of whittled down to a smaller portfolio. And so the point of raising that was that, you know, his approach was really kind of, you know, one big project. Stanford Ranch, do that for many years. McClellan, do that for many years. And obviously we've recently taken on the rail yards, which will be a very similar flavor in terms of the timeline and duration it takes to create the value and develop that project, as was McClellan and Stanford Ranch. You know, probably 15, 20-year project.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, I just wanted to have a lot more deal flow and kind of be actively in the market on a day-to-day or monthly basis. And so doing acquisitions every year, doing new development projects every year, things that we can invest in, stabilize, and create value within a 3 to 5 year time frame versus something that takes 10 to 20 years, right?
Okay.
So something that kind of feeds you in the meantime, right, if you will,
right,
and kind of creates value in the meantime for you and your investors, but then also things that have a very long-term duration that kind of give you the, you know, the kind of the stability and the visibility to have a big infrastructure, a big development team that you can kind of, you know, you can fund that for a long period of time, but in the meantime, still doing a lot of acquisitions and development and creating value that way.
So, yeah, well, let's, two of the projects you mentioned, they're sort of household names here in the region.
Sure.
Everybody, you guys own an Air Force base. My goodness.
Yep.
McClellan Air Force Base. It's like a city over there.
It is, yeah, it is.
Now, that's got to be a more challenging kind of opportunity in that you've redeveloped an Air Force base and converted it into much, much more. Talk to us about that project.
Yeah, so that was a project that was taken on prior to, you know, when I came home. So that acquisition was made in 2000. I didn't come home for, you know, until 2004, I think, 2003, 2004. And so that project was already, at that point in time, kind of baked in terms of having a team in place to operate that. And so the team's done we have a fairly robust executive team that's five of us. It's myself, my dad, and then we have an in-house counsel, Jay Heckenlively. We have a CFO, Frank Myers, and a gentleman that heads up all project management, entitlements, and property management, Alan Hirsch. Each one of those gentlemen have actually been with my dad and I for over 20 years each.
Wow.
So a lot of continuity.
Yeah.
And so with that kind of breadth and depth of skill sets and experience with that team, we've been able to take that from something that basically had no employees the day that we bought it, roughly, to back over to 17,000 to 18,000 employees today.
Wow.
So it's been a huge economic, you know, development success for the region and for North Highlands and Sacramento and the county of Sacramento.
So
it's also been a huge success for us. And that's the best of both worlds when everybody wins, right?
Yeah, so there's 17,000 employees at McClellan Air Force Base.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
yeah, I can only imagine, the economic growth, you know, that creates.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the other metrics are, you know, we have about over 8 million square feet of space. We're now over 90% leased. It took a long time to get there, but we're there. We own and operate one of the largest, if not the largest, private airports, airfields in the country, because most of them are publicly owned, 99%
okay,
of them. We own that fee title. We run the FBO. It's the hangar space. We have about almost 1 million feet of hangars. That's 90% plus leased. So the project, by really any metric, has been an enormous success for everybody. And
is it the type of space where you can continue to build? Is there enough land?
So we have entitlements to build another, I think, 4 to 5 million square feet, and that would be predominantly industrial distribution warehouse space. And so we're actually building 400,000 feet of speculative space right now for warehouse distribution. Yeah.
There's quite a bit of demand right now in the warehouse.
Yeah, space. Warehouse industrial is very strong right now.
Okay.
Yeah, and we have quite a bit of other industrial development in the region. We have 700,000 feet of speculative industrial development we just completed in Richmond. We have 800,000 feet that we've in the process of leasing up in Vacaville, and we have another 700,000 feet we're going to start in Vacaville next year. So that's really been a big part of our growth, is getting more into the vertical development business through this cycle on the industrial side as well as on the multifamily side as well.
Okay, so let's talk about your other big project that most of us are aware of, the rail yards. It's an enormous piece of property,
mm-hmm,
too, a bunch of vacant land out there, and all this opportunity for development. What's the plan?
So the plan is we have a couple hundred acres in downtown Sacramento. We always like to say it does double the footprint of downtown Sacramento. To say that it has an impact on the region is really it's a gross understatement. I mean, it has a huge potential impact on the economic development trajectory of our region and of downtown. And so the project is now fully entitled. We're working through all the civil design for the infrastructure to provide the critical infrastructure that would need to be, you know, provided for any future vertical development. We're working through design review with the city right now on our first mixed-use residential project, so multifamily. That's about 300 units of multifamily. That'll be starting construction by the end of next summer. We're submitting for design review on our first office project, which will be about 300,000 feet of mid-rise office. That'll be going through design review over the next 6 months, and then we'll pause and have to do some pre-leasing to get that one started. We're likely going to start a parking garage in the next couple of years that'll help support the central shops, which is the historical buildings as well. But that's kind of like the exciting thing is we've been doing all the heavy lifting kind of behind the scenes, the CEQA work, the entitlements, it's not really the most exciting aspect of development, but it's sometimes I'd say the most important aspect of development. So that's all now behind us. And so what we're really focused on is advancing the project's development that everyone in the community will physically be able to see. And that's the roads, the buildings, the residential, the office. All that is now moving forward, and that'll get started next year.
So you've got a Kaiser going in there.
We do.
Is that well? And when would we expect to see the Kaiser building break ground or get up and running?
We're hoping that in the next couple of years they'll be started with construction.
Okay.
That's kind of the hope. We couldn't be more excited because I actually don't know, and I say this very transparently frequently, is that I don't know this project ever gets off the ground without a Kaiser. Projects of this magnitude that have as big of an infrastructure requirement, they don't get off the ground unless you're able to land some anchor to be able to kind of de-risk the asset day one. And so we were honestly just fortuitous enough that they had a need. We had a relationship with them, and we were fortunate enough that they were willing to put enough faith in us and our ability to execute and take a bet with us. That's going to work out really well for us and for the community and for them. And so the importance of their anchoring our project can't be understated, because the reality is they're bringing in close to 3,000 jobs. They're all high wage paying jobs for the most part. They'll probably invest between $1.5 to $2 billion in construction to get that facility built. It's approximately a 400 bed facility. It's both a hospital and a few hundred thousand feet of outpatient medical office, and so that's a 24/7. Operation.
Yeah.
Hospitals don't stop operating, and so you have economic activity. You have demand for hospital beds, demand for residential units, demand for coffee, for sandwiches. It's just a great anchor that's going to kind of create that urban vibrancy that these types of projects need and deserve. So,
well, thinking about it's positioned in there between downtown and West Sacramento. The river is right there, right? So, is that land along the river slated for? For what? That seems like it would be the really cool place to have a restaurant or something like that.
Yeah, so the actual, we own about 6 acres along the riverfront there.
Okay.
So there will be some kind of public realm park component to that, but the balance of it will be developed. And so the entitlements allow us to do both residential, hotel, and retail in that location. So whether those are rental, high-end rentals, condos, hotel, condo, at this point we don't have a real specific idea in mind of what it has to be, but it would have to fit within the constraints of that entitlement. But the riverfront, I think, finally, thanks to, in large part, to our mayor's focus and attention on the matter, there's a lot of focus being put on the riverfront, both on the West Sacramento side and the Sacramento side. And I think we can all agree that as a community, we've greatly unrealized potential on the riverfront. We just haven't done a lot of great work to date in a collaborative fashion with the community and the private development community. And there's finally an effort afoot. There's finally a focus. There's talk about certain sources of funds being committed. And that, part of our financing, within the rail yards, will start exploring, how do we potentially, with the city as our partner, figure out ways to finance riverfront infrastructure projects, which are greatly needed to realize the full potential of the rail yards. And
yeah.
So those are conversations that are just starting to get underway, and we're very excited about it.
So, okay, let's break it down from the human standpoint. You still work with your dad. Your dad's still a piece of this business. He has his inner circle for so many years, and here comes Denton into the game. Now, you're no longer a kid anymore, right?
No.
You have your own chops. You're overseeing this thing. Talk to us about that dynamic. What's the family dynamic today?
Well, my dad's worked very hard for many, many years, and I would say it's really not until recently that he's really, started to step off the gas a little bit and not be, kind of a full-time 5-day-a-week, 6-day-a-week, employee or boss or whatever you want to call him.
Right.
Boss, I'd call him. And father.
Yes, sir.
And so he's finally starting to, I think, kind of pull back a little bit, enjoy the life, enjoy his grandkids as anyone at that point in their life cycle should. I'd say that, you know, we've always enjoyed a good working relationship, a good father-son relationship, and it's just taking on a little bit of a different flavor these days as he steps off and I step on the gas more. And fortunately, we have a great, as I said, kind of executive team in place that's been working with my dad for each 20 plus years. And so that transition, I've been working with him for the last 10. So the transition is really not that challenging per se.
Yeah. Well, okay. So a lot of us as entrepreneurs, we all know that nobody goes through life undefeated, right? We all have these setbacks. We all have stresses and strains in our life. Nothing's that easy. It sounds like you got the world by the tail. What are the types of things, the big challenges in your life today? What have you had to overcome in getting to this point?
I think anybody that's in the real estate business, you know, has a lot of challenges, right? I mean, any business, but in real estate, I think the biggest challenge anyone in real estate faced was called 2008 and 2009.
Yeah, right? For sure.
So that was an extraordinarily stressful time in my life because it was really hard to, you know, kind of see your way out of the mess, if you will. And we were in a pretty good position, right? We didn't lose any assets or anything. We didn't know no foreclosures or bankruptcies or a lot of these things that many people faced in the real estate industry in 2008, 2000. But it's also not to say, I mean, you know, you see the value of everything, you know, go down enough to where you really start questioning. It's like, how are we going to get through this? And sure enough, you know, we just kind of put together a game plan, you know, around 2010, and here's what we're going to do and here's how we're going to do it, and made some big bets and some big plays and things we thought that would work out pretty well. And, you know, pretty much all of those have worked out and exceeded all of our expectations and in every way. And so, I think it's just about, you know, tuning out the noise. You know, the noise, you know, at the time, it's always kind of darkest before the dawn. Mm-hmm. And 2008, 2009 was pitch black. And it just took a lot of, you know, kind of courage to kind of just sit down and say, how are we going to get out of this? How are we going to, and there's a survival aspect and there's a thrive aspect, right? And the survival aspect is really just managing your risk and your leverage and your debt and the types of assets you own. So we came into it okay, but it didn't feel good.
Mm-hmm. How did it test the team? I mean, you had these inner circle guys. I can imagine in those stressful situations, you either come together more closely or, you know, when it gets hot, sometimes there's angst or anxieties that cause stress internally.
You know, we were just fortunate enough going into the downturn that we were positioned okay. We just weren't over levered, so that the heat within the executive team wasn't that hot. And to the extent that there was pressures, you know, we actually did exceedingly well through that downturn. And actually, we leased more. You know, we were all of the absorption in the industrial market, I think, in like 2009, 2010, at McClellan.
Okay.
Because of we were just able to be very competitive by virtue of our basis in the asset, which was important. And so, at the same time, we got a huge refinancing done on McClellan during the worst financial crisis in the world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one, that's a testament to the collective, you know, executive team's just commitment and foresight with the project and at LDK Ventures. But at the end of the day, it really became more of an opportunity to, I would say, thrive than just survive, because we set ourselves up right. If you don't set yourself up right and you go into one of those downturns, then you spend 100% of your bandwidth, the capacity and spirit fighting the alligators that are at your ankles, and you have no capacity to thrive. So we were in a position to survive and thrive, which was fortunate.
So there's obviously market fluctuations of these last few weeks. And when the market goes up and down or shows volatility, do you have flashbacks of 2008? Or is it, look, we're a strong economy, there's enough good things going right, especially here in Sacramento, that we just keep on trucking? How do you view it?
Yeah, so back in 08, 09, so I came from the hedge fund industry, so I was very like public market, public equity-based mindset, macro mindset, and that's helped and hurt me. But in 08, 09, I think it helped a lot that we could kind of see the writing on the walls, like this isn't going to be good. We don't need to be adding to the risk, and for that matter, let's liquidate our equity holdings. And so it's like, so when things like this start happening, and I think, I mean, we're way overdue for a massive correction, right? I'm not a negative mindset person, more of a glass half full type person, but we are way overdue for a correction. Corrections can be 30 to 50%. Like, it happens, right? Recessions happen. It's a way of life, right? It's so it's something you have to expect and anticipate. I think the, and I think we're going into one, right? Sometime of now, next 12 months, we're going into one. And the question is, what you have to ask yourself is, how is that going to affect, you know, the Bay Area? How is that going to affect, you know, Sacramento? And the reason I say the Bay Area is because the Bay Area is what drives a lot of Sacramento in terms of housing demand.
Right.
And if you look back through the cycles of what happened, the Bay Area has always been one of the most highly volatile markets in terms of real estate values. But they always set higher highs and higher lows in values, always. And this time around, I think it's actually very different. And the reason for that is that if you look back to like 01, you know, the dot-com crash, you had, you know, completely almost frivolous, because I was working in the investment banking business at the time. These were businesses that had no future. They were just, they had a high burn rate. They were going to go bankrupt. It was a matter of when. And people were building a ton of speculative office space to accommodate them. Well, that didn't work out too well, right? And at the same time, you had a bunch of, you know, hardware-based companies that were building out the internet that were massively leveraged. Well, what happened? You know, invest CapEx into the internet infrastructure went down. They were highly levered. They went bankrupt. So you had a massive downdraft. And you go back to 07, 08, it was all financial industry-driven, housing-driven. That was a massive downdraft on the market, even in the Bay Area. But it snapped back very quickly. And in the Bay, I think this time around, what you didn't have the last few times is very large companies with very large barriers to entries that are very profitable. Whether it's Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Google, Salesforce, go down the list, and then you go into the biotech and everything else. There is such a durability to the base of business that's in the Bay Area now. It's very hard to see how you're going to have some dot-com bust. It's not to say that those stock prices mm-hmm. couldn't go down 50%. They could. But is that ultimately going to, you know, unhinge the real estate market there? Here, it'll flatten out there. It may even go down 10 or 15% in terms of values and rents. But in Sacramento, you know, one, that provides a certain source of demand for us. That's a positive. Two, in Sacramento, we've typically, you know, pre-07-08, we were kind of a steady eddy, boring little market, 3 to 5% growth, government type market, not very exciting. And then you had all this kind of false demand pulled forward with financing and, you know, the single family, the mortgage meltdown, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when that blew up, we built a ton of office space to support and other real estate to support residential real estate, right? So when that fell apart, our entire market fell apart, industrial, office, right. Residential, multifamily somewhat, but it held in there. But this time, you know, we were doing 18,000 units at the peak in 06. Now we're doing, I don't know, 6,000-7,000 units of single family residential. We should be doing 8 or 9 at least just to maintain some level of supply that's reasonable. We're not even hitting that. And the point I raise there is that we have backfilled, whether it's industrial, multifamily, retail, office, all of those markets are generally healthy in Sacramento now. And we've backfilled that in a market where we're only doing 6,000 housing units.
Right.
So we actually, in my mind, we've backfilled all that vacancy that was created in 07, 08, and 09 with a much more durable tenancy that's more healthcare oriented, you know, state. And just some of these entrepreneurial businesses that pop up here and there.
Okay, so we only have a minute left. What would you say to the entrepreneur who is thinking about expanding their business? Is it time to invest? Should you stay levered to the hilt to expand? Or is it time to be a little more conservative?
Well, if you're an entrepreneur, by very nature, you're trying to go after some. You're either disrupting an existing market or you're going after you're starting out as, you know, 1%, 0.1% of a total addressable market. And so if that addressable market shrinks by 5% because, you know, we go into recession and GDP goes down because it's GDP sensitive, what do you care?
Right.
Right. You're just trying to grow from a very small piece of a pie into some bigger piece of the pie. So I paying attention to all this macro stuff, and it's kind of meaningless to me. Yeah. If you're an entrepreneur really trying to kind of go out and grasp, from a very small piece of the pie to just some nominally larger piece of that pie by disrupting it or just hustling or mm-hmm. whatever it is you do. So I don't mm-hmm. really think that it should mm-hmm. affect any entrepreneur's thinking, just to some degree. It's like just hustle.
Just keep building your business. Yeah. Don't worry about the stock market. Go build your business.
Yes, go build your, go, you know, control the things you control and don't worry about the things you can't.
I love it. Well, Denton Kelly, thanks for sharing your story. It's really cool to get inside the mind of one of the most successful guys, one of the most successful families in the region. Thanks a lot, Denton, for coming.
Thank you very much for having me, Mark. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
If you like our entrepreneurial stories, if you like the messages that we bring that inspire, if you want a little more Mark Haney, not everybody does, but if you do, feel free to subscribe. feel free to be part of our community, engage, comment, share. I want to get to know you better. You want to get to know me better. Follow me on all our social media platforms at The Mark Haney. I look forward to knowing you better. And let's get to know each other better so we can help build these businesses that we love.